Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Warriors.
And this is Ryan.
And the three of us are together in one room again.
This is great.
It's wonderful.
For the first time in what, like 2 months?
It's been a long time.
Oh, it sure has.
Man, I just wish one of you guys would put on pants.
Can we put on the same pair of pants?
Oh, you share one leg and Ryan shares the other?
Yeah.
Well, you can.
Okay. Well, this is the Nintendo, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is a Super Nintendo version.
That means it's super.
Yeah. And it also means we're going to talk about Super Nintendo games.
Oh.
And we do them sort of semi-chronologically as they came out 21 years ago. You know, we skip around a little bit depending on what we have to talk about and what we've played and kind of fill in the schedule so we have something to talk about each month. But this month we got two games. Two pretty good ones, too. Mega Man 7 and Yoshi's Island. Mm-hmm. And Wes, I'm going to let you pick. Where do you want to start?
Mega Man 7. Sure.
Mega Man 7.
So do you want a tight mechanic side-scroller or a really tight mechanic side-scroller? I mean, which one do you want to get down with?
Which one's which?
Let's go with Mega Man 7, because that's what you said the first time.
All right.
This one came out September 1st, 1995. Published and developed by Capcom. Directed by Yoshihisa Suda.
It is the seventh installment.
It is the seventh installment in the Mega Man franchise.
I'm hoping.
This one was produced by Tokuro Fujiwara. And Tokuro Fujiwara, if you've never heard of this guy.
Oh, wait, who hasn't heard of Tokuro Fujiwara?
He directed Ghosts and Goblins, Mega Man, and Bionic Commando, and then went on to become the producer of the Mega Man series, the Breath of Fire series, a lot of the Capcom Disney games like DuckTales, the Mega Man X series, the Final Fight series. Like, this guy was a pretty huge deal at Capcom until 1996, when he left Capcom and formed his own game development company called Whoopi Camp.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of that.
Founded in 1997. I think they did two games and they went defunct in 2000.
Hmm. Oh my god.
After 2000, he executive produced a few games here and there and was also a game designer on the Wii game Mad World that was published by Sega, developed by Platinum Games.
Oh yeah, that was a weird game.
Man. Yeah, but this guy, like, he was the producer, the mind behind, like, the Mega Man series, the Mega Man X series, all like the Final Fight series, all these really high-profile 8 and 16-bit Capcom games. I mean, Keiji Inafune, who is the character designer in Mega Man 7, gets a lot of credit for being the sort of father of the Mega Man series. And, you know, he does do a lot of character design stuff. He's behind a lot of the artistic direction. But as far as, like, the production of the game and the design of the game, this guy, Fujiwara, he's the mastermind of this series. And a bunch of other series from Capcom. Like, this guy was a rock star. And he seems to have fallen off the face of the earth after the year 2000. I found a little bit of evidence that he founded this development studio called Deep Space, which is a development house for Sony. Mm. But he really does not have many credits to his name after 2003. He was a designer on a PS2 horror game called Hungry Ghosts, which looks pretty interesting, but that game never made it out of Japan. But anyway, yeah, it's just very strange that this guy was such a mastermind and then just disappeared, evaporated.
Maybe his dreams were shattered when if he struck his own thing off. He's like, I'm done with the Capcom altogether. I'm starting my own project. And then 2 years after he's like, this is gonna be my baby. It just doesn't work out, then, you know, I can understand him being a little jilted.
Yeah. So at this point in the Mega Man franchise, we have already had two Mega Man X games. And actually, Mega Man 6 was released in March of 1994. So just about like 15, 16 months
prior. Oh, Mega Man X had already come out with this?
Yeah, Mega Man X was already out. Mega Man X 2 was already out. Mega Man X 2 came out like January of 95.
Oh, okay. So I was watching this game earlier because I never actually played 7. So I went back and I watched it through the first four bosses.
Yeah.
I was like, this is very similar to Mega Man X. It must have gotten some influence from this. All the way around, Wes.
Yeah, this was the first 16-bit Mega Man game. Like, Mega Man 6 came out on the NES in March of 94. So Mega Man 6 on the NES came out after Mega Man X on the Super Nintendo.
It does feel a little more cartoony than the other Mega Mans.
The sprites are definitely bigger, and it has a
smoother, more animated kind of look to it.
Yeah, and the color palette isn't quite as, it's a little bit brighter, but also a little bit simpler. I think Mega Man X will show you more colors, but because Mega Man 7 is, what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't try to express as many colors, so they're all like pop more vibrantly. There's a lot more contrast to the colors there. It gives it that more cartoony look than a Mega Man X. I mean, and like Mega Man 7 does.
That's just gorgeous.
Yeah, some of these screens does look really good.
Yeah, it's a nice looking game. They got nice looking sprites. The design of the game, they do get stuck in a lot of the 8-bit sensibilities. So, for example, we're going to compare it a lot to Mega Man X because it is its contemporary. So, I've played up to Mega Man 3, and it seems like I didn't play 4, 5, or 6. The structure in Mega Man 7 has not changed a whole lot. It does have this little introduction level, a lot like Mega Man X, where it's showing you the basics of the game. You don't have as many abilities as you do in Mega Man X. You don't, like, have your wall jump. So you don't have, like, your wall kick to kick your way up walls.
You also don't have your slide jump.
You don't have, like, your dash.
Yeah. But you have a slide.
You're right.
But you don't have your dash jump like you do in X, which is fantastic for making those big gaps.
Right.
Also, it seems like the jumping mechanism is a little... He doesn't jump as far. You can't make as many big jumps as you can in X.
Right.
X seems like it's more...
Acrobatic.
Acrobatic, more precise. But with this one, not precise, but it seems like you can it easier.
Well, no, I do think that there's a level of precision to Mega Man X that's not in Mega Man 7. Mega Man 7, like, it doesn't really ask too much of you as far as the platform is concerned.
The guy can only jump like a foot in front of him. I mean, he really can't do much.
Yeah, it's much more of a classic Mega Man feel where the emphasis is more on, like, stopping and figuring out, like, a little mini boss or a big enemy that's in your way, rather than moving fast and getting through levels, dodging enemies, and pulling off these really big feats of platforming.
Yeah.
It does have the Robot Master selection screen, like the other Mega Man standard, the Mega Man Classic games.
There is an order.
There is an order to the way you want to do things. And what will happen is once you beat the first four, you'll have like this little interstitial boss fight, and then the next four will open up. But you can still go to the four that you've already beaten. You are able to re-enter levels and replay them. You can't exit them until you find a particular item. There is an item that you have to find in the game that allows you to exit a level once you've entered it, if you've already beaten
the boss. Oh, there's one item in one level.
Right. And
wow.
But it's then reusable. Then you just have that ability to leave these levels that you've already beaten.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a strange thing to have hidden, to like make available to you later on. But anyway, it is what it is. And then once you beat the 8 Robot Masters, Wily's Castle is back. But one of the cool things about like going to Wily's Castle in this game is, in previous Mega Man games, if memory serves me correctly, once you enter Wily's Castle, you then like have to proceed through every stage of Wily's Castle without like getting a break in between. You can actually like take breaks in between these levels, go fight other robot masters, play through their stages again if you feel like it. There's a shop you can go to buy like energy tanks.
Hmm.
So like, it's not like Mega Man X where you have like these refillable tanks that you could find. You don't have like health upgrades or anything like that. You just have like consumable energy tanks that you use once and then they're gone. And then you can just go find or buy more.
Well, how do you buy more? There isn't really like a fund in the game.
Well, there are little bolts or big bolts that enemies
that's
drop.
That's what that was.
Yeah, and that's your currency.
Huh.
And you can do that. You can buy upgrades that are just found in other levels, or you can buy consumable things like energy tanks and lives. So yeah, there is a sort of weird economy to it. And like other standard Mega Man games, you gain powers once you beat the Robot Master. It's going to be effective on a different Robot Master. So part of the fun is trying to figure out what powers are going to be good on who and what's going to be the most effective way to beat bosses. Levels are shorter than in Mega Man X, which is not a big deal. Just a different sort of pace into the game. It is strange, though, because like what I was talking about earlier about this game being stuck in the past and its traditions in a lot of ways is that in Mega Man X, when you enter a level, it's just one fluid level. Whereas in standard classic Mega Man games, you have like those screen breaks. And when you get to the edge of the screen, it transitions over to your next one.
Mm.
That might have been a limitation of the NES, or maybe just like part of the design of the game. Maybe it wasn't a limitation of the NES, but it's still carrying over to the Super Nintendo, which is strange. Like, why not just make one fluid level? I don't really know what having these screen breaks do for you.
Well, maybe it's part of like what Wes was talking about. Like how there's just, you're jump seems to go further. You seem to traverse more map. All at once. Maybe it's their way of kind of bracketing you.
Yeah, maybe. Like, bracketing you to, like, really specific challenges. Like, you're going to go through this area, and then you're going to fight this enemy that's in your way. Mm. And then, okay, you've moved on to the next one. Yeah, maybe.
Mega Man 7 is very traditional. I mean, even the bosses seem pretty straightforward. Where in, like, Mega Man X, there was a lot more to them. Their little fighting arena, so to speak, are even a lot more elaborate. The bosses have a little bit more difficult of a sequence. Like, for instance, Freeze Man, all he does is, like, he drops some things and he shoots. Or Penguin, he's jumping around the place. He's got these things he got to avoid. He's hanging from the ceiling. And then you got the armadillo that's jumping around the corners and everything left and right.
You have the ostrich in Mega Man X that actually has this huge open area. And he'll, like, run past you. And he's real damn hard to beat if you don't have the specific ostrich power that you need. Yeah,
no, that's X2.
Oh, yeah, you're X2. Right. But
and then you got the still chameleon. Came out before, still you got the chameleon in freaking X2. That's the bane of your existence. That goes invisible and hangs from the ceiling and shit.
But in Mega Man 7, you still have, like, the really traditional... Yeah, they even, like, have the man suffix. I mean, like, a Freeze Man and Turbo Man and Jump Man.
Yeah, it's no longer, like...
Shade Man. It's not, like, Boomer...
Chill Penguin.
Boomer Kowanger.
Yeah,
it's my favorite.
I think there's a Turbo Man.
The Turbo Man, yeah.
Is there a Turbo Man?
There is a Turbo Man. You know, this movie, I think, takes a lot of just inspiration from 90s pop culture. Actually, like, I think all of the boss designs were actually, like, submissions, like, fan submissions. Like, they had a contest, and they had, like, 2,000 fan submissions with art and stuff.
Oh, my God.
I'm pretty sure that's what they did in this game. But you have, like, Slash Man, and he's got Wolverine claws.
Yeah.
Like, and what was real big in the 90s? Fucking X-Men.
True. Well, you notice how most of these are not threatening, by the way. Shade Man is not threatening. Junk Man is not something you're... Sword Man? I'm scared to death of Sword Man.
Cloud Man.
Cloud Man. What is this guy going to do to you?
Spring Man.
Like, are you really threatened by
watch out
things?
For all this stored kinetic energy.
Shade Man.
Slash Man.
You know.
Slash Man is like the Wolverine guy. But, like, Slash Man, he's got these Wolverine claws, and he jumps around like Wolverine. But his stage is Jurassic Park. You even, like, see, like, the electrified fences, and you're fighting dinosaurs as you're going through Slash Man stage.
So is, like, Freeze Man supposed to be Sub-Zero or something?
It's funny, because on Freeze Man, on his actual boss fight, in the background, you see a frozen mechanical dinosaur.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. Yeah, in the background. Funny. I thought that was really cool while I was watching it. I was like, that's a really cool-looking boss fight.
I mean, you
just for the background.
You saying, like, frozen things in the background reminds me of this part. Like, after you beat the four Robot Masters in the beginning, you have that boss fight that I mentioned. You actually, it's the narrative pretense is that Dr. Wily has gone to a museum for some reason, I don't know, and you find out that he's there, you go there to stop him, and while you're just kind of walking through the museum, it's a really short section, you see, like, past Mega Man Robot Masters, like, in these cryogenic tubes behind you. Maybe they're not cryogenic tubes because they're robots, they're just, like, some sort of stasis pods, but you see, like, Snake Man, and... You see Guts Man being stolen. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's really cool. That's the Freeze Man level right there.
Cool little background touch to the dinosaur
skeleton.
It's a cool
background touch. The boss fight is just boring. He just shoots, drops icicles.
And well, what he'll also do is he'll freeze the ground, and if you're touching the ground while he's freezing it, your feet will get stuck. You won't be able to move.
Hmm.
But they're definitely not nearly as intricate as a Mega Man X.
So I'm guessing these are mini bosses, like the other ones before this stage.
Yeah, like the polar bear.
These guys look so cool.
The polar bears are regular enemies. You come across a couple of them on that stage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But like on one level, there's a big steamroller thing. I forget some of the other ones, but they do have some mini bosses. But it's roughly
there's
just
one
shoot them really hard.
There's like a beetle. Like you're fighting a beetle underwater.
One is like those. Those little guys with the helmets with the big, like, medic signs on the helmets, they're just falling down shooting. And that's it. It's really just waited out. That's all you gotta do in that fight.
It's kind of like your bog standard elevator sequence in any side-scrolling beat-em-up game. You always have those. But actually, there's a really efficient way to do that. Junkman gives you a shield, much like Woodman, a little bit derivative there. But the shield, while it's spinning around you, you can just ram into the enemies and it kills them.
Yeah.
And you're invulnerable. So it's
I think the order you're supposed to do is Cloudman, Junkman, Freezeman, and then do Blastman. I think that's the order of the first four.
No, that's the order he did in the Let's Play, but actually Blastman's the best guy to go with first, and then the order he said. But Freezeman, like, that also has to do with what items you're able to collect. Like, Freezeman has... His stage has a couple of collectible items that you can then go back and use in other people's stages to get different power-ups.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So doing Freezeman first allows you to just get those quicker.
And his power up that you get from him is exactly the same as Chill Penguin. Mm. It's exactly the same.
Well, I mean, they're still playing up these like these really standard things. Like you have your ice guy, and you have your guy who blows things up.
Yeah.
You know, you have your guy that makes a shield around you. Like there's nothing revolutionary going on, which I think was part of the criticism of this game and of this franchise. Like once you get past like Mega Man 3 and 4,
it's just the same thing, different look.
It's not changing. And oh, how spoiled they were back then. Because how long has it been since a Mega Man game now?
Oh my god, I would love a new Mega Man.
Yeah, they were getting Mega Man games every
not
year.
Not on a handheld. I would love a console Mega Man. Just make it awesome. Come on.
What's wrong with a handheld?
I don't like that kind of game with a handheld. Since it's...
No, they're good. You're wrong.
Yeah. All right.
I do want to get back to some of the mechanics. So, like I mentioned before, you don't have your wall kick. You don't have your wall slide. You don't have your dash. But you do get your charge shot from the beginning. That's not an upgrade that you collect later. You can just always charge up your gun as you're going. You can slide. You, of course, have your dog Rush. He's back in. It's pretty standard stuff there. You got like your Rush coil, which allows you to jump a little bit higher. You have your Rush jet that you can fly along. There's also this function called Rush Search. And this is a little bit obtuse. Not quite as obtuse as some of the things you have to find in Mega Man X2. But what you'll do is, like, you'll call Rush in, he'll sniff around, and if there's something, like, buried in the ground, he'll dig it up. And that's how you find some powers. Like, I think the exit power that I mentioned is buried right in front of Freeze Man's stage. But you can also just find other things. Like, sometimes Rush will dig up a 1-up for you, or Rush will dig up some energy that can refill your health. So, and once you have, like, these little... There's collectible letters that spell out Rush in the first 4 stages. And once you collect all those, you get this upgrade called Adapt. And what happens is Rush comes in and the two of you robots transform into one robot. And it basically gives you a double jump, which is pretty cool.
For how long does that last, though?
Until you die. Yeah, it's not like a power-up that uses its own energy. It's just like that's just how you play now. What happens, though, is you do lose your slide. So there is a reason to play a standard Mega Man rather than Adapt.
Okay. But when you die, you're back to the regular Mega Man?
Yeah, but you can still just switch back to it.
Oh, okay.
It's like gaining a new robot master power, except it doesn't have consumable energy.
Oh,
it's just
okay.
There.
That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. And we talked about this before, about the Mega Man series and the Mega Man X series kind of being stuck in the past. This game has a password system for some goddamn reason. It just doesn't save. There's no save functionality. When Capcom has made other games on the system where you can save, it's not like they don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
We talked about Demon's Crest probably about a year ago now, almost a year ago. And that game saved, and that was a fun game.
Yeah.
I don't know why they think that this is how Mega Man should function. And again, it's them just kind of caught in the tradition stages. This is how Mega Man's always been, so this is how they're going to do it.
Hmm. Maybe they thought it was something that people wouldn't care about, quite frankly. Maybe they were just like, it's a novelty. Like, maybe people just don't, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, full screen versus widescreen. They're like, who cares if we crop off part of the movie? So they're like, no one's going to mind. It fits the screen. Who gives a shit?
Right. And
it's like, hey, they're playing the game. If they need these items, they'll go track them down.
Wasn't that so weird? Like, as we were transitioning from VHS to DVD, I would actually, like, people would make comments about how the actual widescreen version of a movie cut off part of the picture. It's like, no, the version you've been watching on your VHS tapes has been cutting off part of the picture.
How did you think, like, if you just sat someone down and made them think about it, they would realize,
yeah,
like, what the hell, is this is a terrible
they
decision.
They used to, like, sell it 2 different versions, the widescreen and full screen.
I don't know if they...
That's what they would do.
Yeah, they would
did
sell
they actually
it.
Sell them
yeah,
separately?
They sold 2 different versions, widescreen and full screen.
I worked at a used DVD store, and that would happen all the time, where people would come in and they would specifically want one version or the other, or they would be selling one because they thought they were getting the other version.
Huh.
You know, and it's really is obnoxious. The worst thing is pan and scan. Pan and scan was something that they would do where they would actually move the frame in the box. Like, they wouldn't just cut off the corners.
Oh my god.
They would try to fit, like, the 16:9 image or whatever based on the action. So you would, like, have somebody sitting there intentionally, like, having 2 faces that are trying to talk. And it would keep going back and forth.
That's obnoxious.
It would bounce like a ping pong ball going back and forth between a conversation. It was just awful. It's such a terrible decision. You wouldn't go to an art gallery where they cut off, 6 inches of each side of the picture.
No,
you
that'd,
know?
Be,
it's like,
that'd be absurd.
It's why does it work for a movie? It doesn't.
Television ruins
Tangent,
everything.
Sorry.
Well, yeah. TV did kill the radio star.
Thank you for that.
That's a fact.
The Mega Man X series, like
DVD
you mentioned before, not...
I misquoted.
Thank you.
Misquoted.
Well, we're talking about a little bit more about the Mega Man X versus Mega Man 7 differences. Like, X definitely has this different tone to it. It's not quite as silly or whimsical in certain ways. Because in Mega Man 7, there's a part where you fight a semi-truck. Mm-hmm. You're on the back of it, and you have to shoot it as you're riding it. Or, like I mentioned before, there's the Jurassic Park level. Shade Man bears a striking resemblance to Count Chocula.
Yeah. Oh, is that the Zubat? It looks like
Zubat. Yeah, the Count Chocula Zubat. Yeah, that's him.
Wow. That was my first when I saw that sprite. By the way, I've never played
this game. You're talking about the standard enemy that flies around in a level. Yeah?
No. There was a...
Are you talking about the robot?
There was one that was a lineup of all of the different bosses together that's an image, and there was one that had, like, big purple bat wings.
That's Shade Man.
Yeah.
Count Chocula.
Count Chocula.
But yeah, like I was mentioning before, it's widely considered a mediocre entry into the series.
It's fine. It's more Mega Man.
Yeah. And I
quit your bitching
again. Like, the series wasn't really changing or evolving, which I guess was what people wanted. But I think that this game could be considered very much like average. Like, it's fine. It's okay.
All right.
Yeah.
It does. I think what people consider like the biggest contribution to the series that this game has was it introduced this character called Bass and his dog Treble, and they sort of become like this. Antagonistic force against Mega Man.
I can't remember. Are they bad guys or are they like Proto Man, where they're like bad guys but yet kind of good?
I'm not sure.
Bad guy turn good.
Proto Man eventually, somewhere in the series, does take the turn where he just becomes like this mentor figure, because he shows up in Mega Man 7 and he shows up in places like in hidden rooms, and he'll give you hints about where you should look for secrets.
Yeah, kind of like Zero for Mega Man X.
And and actually, it's good that you bring that up, because there is a point in the game, like once you found Proto Man in two earlier levels, if you find him in this later level, he will give you his shield. And you can run around with Proto Man's shield, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it can reflect certain
attacks.
Fantastic. But he becomes like this mentor figure. I'm not sure what happens with the character of Bass. In Mega Man 7, and spoilers for this 21-year-old game, he sort of presents himself as this friendly rival. And then once you beat the 8 robot masters, he takes this heel turn and reveals that he was evil the whole time and you have to fight him.
Oh.
So there's that. I'm not sure where he goes in the series after
that. Man, I wonder what the actual story of Mega Man is.
I don't.
Yeah.
I've never, never once.
I don't. I
So it's weird that this game has never really ended up on very many compilations. I mean, I guess it's not that weird. It's like the one entry in the Super Nintendo. So Capcom recently bundled together all of the NES Mega Man games, 1 through 6, and sold them on a cartridge, and this one was not included. But, I mean, it was on this anniversary collection that was on the GameCube, PS2, and Xbox, so there's that. It is not on the Virtual Console except on the new 3DS. So that's the only place you can get the game. Now, unless you buy like the $40 cartridge, you can buy a cartridge for $40 on Amazon. If you're really interested, the new 3DS Virtual Console version is probably the way to go, because you get save states. You don't have to mess around with passwords. But like 7 and 8 are really kind of like these lost games in the Mega Man series. They're just not nearly as accessible as the other Mega Man games. I don't think 8 came around until like the PS2 games. The series kind of went on hiatus for a little while. After, X3? X4 was PS1.
Wow.
But anyway, I digress. Mm-hmm. Anything else about Mega Man 7 that we want to bring up?
Not that they're the gospel truth of anything, but IGN did a top 10 ranking of the Mega Man games.
Did it make it?
Number 10 is Mega Man 8, and number 9 on their list is Mega Man 7. So they're technically the worst.
What's number 1?
Oh, they ranked like the Mega Man games 1 through 10?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
So this is excluding Mega Man X.
Just say the order real quick.
Yeah, sure, I'll go through real quick. 8, 7, 6, 4, 5, they gotta generate clicks, so I'm going to the second page now. clocking in at number 5 is the original Mega Man. Mega Man 10... 9, 3, and then the number 1 is Mega Man 2.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they have comments here, and they're basically saying the exact same thing as you are. Yeah. It's like it's a throwback. It's trying to be like the old one. Mega Man takes up too much of the screen.
I mean,
it's kind of blocky.
It's weird that they call it a throwback. It came out a year after the previous Mega Man. It's not really throwing back to much of anything.
Yeah. So That's their take.
But anyway, I mean, I kind of prefer Mega Man 3.
From the images, it looks gorgeous. Yeah, it's like there's some very pretty pixel art.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice looking game. It's really really bright and cheerful for an apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's take a break and then come back with Yoshi's Island.
All right.
Yoshi's Island came out October 4th, 1995. Developed by Nintendo EAD, published by Nintendo. This game had four directors.
Wow.
Four.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? So I'm going to go through a couple of them. Most of these names might sound familiar to some people. First credited director is Takashi Tezuka. And
of course.
This guy, anyone who's familiar with video games probably know Shigeru Miyamoto. The creator of Mario, creator of Zelda, creator of Donkey Kong. He's the Shakespeare of video games. He's the guy. He's the Spielberg.
Yeah.
Takashi Tezuka is sort of the Luigi to Miyamoto's Mario. He's the sidekick.
That's just mean, dude.
He's
the Ken to his Ryu.
Yeah, the Ken to his Ryu. That's a good one, too.
Because I'll go to a Sonic?
No, shut up. It's terrible.
Tails.
No, we're not using Sonic as an example. Absolutely not. But Tezuka mostly produces Mario games, and he has been the main producer of the Mario series for quite some time now. He's just as, if not slightly less important to Nintendo than Miyamoto himself. Like, he is a hugely important figure for Nintendo. Just doesn't take as much as the spotlight as the camera-hogging Shigeru Miyamoto.
He's the lead developer on this?
He's the director of this.
That is his title.
One of the other directors is Toshihiko Nakago. I should make you read these names, Wes. And Nakago is this really mysterious figure for Nintendo. He's not credited at the front of things all that much. He's credited mostly as a supervisor recently, which is kind of a nebulous term. But he's also mainly credited as a programmer or a program director. But just like reading about this guy, like through the very limited like times he's mentioned in interviews or does interviews himself, he's viewed as this part of Dream Team at Nintendo, or they are sometimes referred to as like the Golden Triangle of Nintendo. Him,
the Triforce.
Yeah, the Triforce. Him and Miyamoto and Tezuka are viewed as like the three guys. But he takes up even less of a spotlight than Tezuka.
But he's like an invisible hand of the project.
Yeah.
You really don't see his direct contribution.
Right, but apparently whatever contributions he's giving are seen as
profoundly, like if he's considered a part of this equation.
Mm-hmm. And then the other two directors... God damn it, this fucking name, no.
Want me to do it? Oh boy.
Wes, take this one.
Shingo Fumi.
That's not bad. Shingo Fumi Hino.
Hino.
Yeah,
Shingo
Fumi. Nicely handled.
Yeah, you know.
He's mostly...
That's what she said.
Thank you. He's mostly a graphics designer. He created the character of Yoshi. He's also one of the co-directors of the Pikmin series now. And Hideki Kono, who is mostly a graphics and game designer, he's actually the guy who produced the four most recent Mario Kart games. So Mario Kart Wii, Mario Kart DS, Mario Kart 7 and 8. He's the guy who is helming that series. And Yoshi's Island, of course, produced by Shigeru Miyamoto. Music by Koji Kondo, probably one of the most famous music makers in the video game industry. And we talked a little bit about this game when we talked about Miyamoto's reaction to the Donkey Kong Country visual style. He had that infamous...
Oh, he was harsh.
Yeah.
He was not feeling it.
He had that infamous quote about gamers being willing to put up with poor game design as long as the graphics look pretty. So yeah, he had this rebellious streak.
So he kind of had to eat his own... Or wait, was he directly involved in this, or is this just his own take on it?
He, in the Yoshi's Island series, you mean?
Yeah.
He was actually very much involved in both Donkey Kong Country and Yoshi's Island. And his...
So he's kind of got to eat crow on this, if that's his thoughts about what Donkey Kong was.
Well, he has since softened his opinion. He has become a little bit more humble in his opinion of Donkey Kong Country.
Good of him. Right.
there was this whole movement at Nintendo... Like, after the big success of Donkey Kong Country, to then change every visual style of every game to the Donkey Kong Country visual style. And apparently Miyamoto did not want his games messed with. So development for this game started almost right after Super Mario World was released. So this game was in development for quite some time, just trying to, I guess, hone the game, perfect it. And when they first brought the game to Nintendo management at the time to pitch it and show off their product, they were like, great, now make it look like Donkey Kong Country.
Oh.
So Miyamoto, I assume, like, gathered up his papers, stormed out, and went, fucking show them, and brought it back as if it was drawn by a child. And it looks really great. I really love the visual style.
I think it's a great visual style for the type of game that it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're fucking Yoshi babysitting a baby.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Thanks for breaking down the narrative, because that's it. That's
it right there. He eats a guy, then shits him out as an egg, which he uses to then beat up other guys.
Yep. And then, of course, when he brought back this like more cartoony, crayon-drawn visual style to management, I guess the marketing team thought they could sell it. So, like, okay, yeah, let's just run with this. And actually, you know, for all of, like, the rebellion... Mm. Associated like with the probably some of the folklore stuff about this development of this game at this point, it actually reminds me more of Donkey Kong Country than it does Super Mario World.
Really?
And it does so for a few reasons, mostly because it just experiments with these extra mechanics. So when you have a Mario game, it's kind of like this purest run and jump platformer that has some power-ups in there for flavor. But you don't need any of these power-ups. You don't need to master the cape mechanics in Super Mario World to beat the game. It fucking helps, but you don't need it. You can run through the game just as little Mario.
It's important if you want a quick save.
Right.
At the ghost house.
Indeed. But like in Donkey Kong Country, they examined the sort of mechanics that would be innate to a ape character. So you have things that... they require you to master that aren't associated with a power-up. They're just things he can do. You can roll, climb, pick things up, and throw things. You have the barrel blasts, like environmental stuff, like barrel blasts and minecarts, things that, you know, you better learn how to do this to figure out the game. Mm-hmm. And Yoshi is a lot of the same way. He does run and jump as in a standard platformer, and he actually runs a lot faster than I remembered. And I think he runs a lot faster than he does in the next several games in the Yoshi series. But he's got that flutter jump that you need to figure out to, you know, get some extra height and distance on your jumps. You can...
Which I recognize from the fighting series, like Brawl.
Yep.
You know, oh, yeah.
Kind of how the Yoshi operates.
Yeah, he's got the ground pound, mm-hmm. like he does in the Super Smash Brothers series. Mm-hmm. And actually, he's got that ground pound that precedes Mario even having a ground pound. That's kind of a mainstay to Mario's repertoire at this point. Mm. He can jump on enemies to kill some of them, but the main mechanic for eliminating enemies is going to be to stick out your tongue, ground from a distance, eat them, and turn them into your unborn children, which you then throw at other enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like throwing the eggs, like it ends up like giving you like this arc, and you have to line up your shot correctly. And when you've really mastered that and like associate that with a speed run, you can pull off some really amazing feats. But all of these mechanics that they throw into the game lead to some level designs that are definitely more puzzly than a game like Super Mario World. You have these more maze-like qualities than standard Mario levels. What that allows you to do is allows them to be a bit more deliberate when setting up their obstacles. You're not getting very many things that are real twitch-based or require you to pull off these acrobatic feats. I mean, you can, you can achieve this level of acrobatics and precision. Like you were telling me about the speed run you saw a guy do.
Oh yeah, it's like watching a sniper play a side scroller as fast as they can.
Yeah,
it's really impressive.
Yeah, YouTube it right now.
Do it. But what happens is you have this structure of progression that's pretty standard to a platformer. You don't have like these branching paths. Although you probably could, because I think this game would lend itself really well to things like secret exits, but they've never really messed with that too much in the Yoshi series. Like in Super Mario World, that's one of the most fun things to do, is find like these different ways to exit levels and unlock all the paths.
Well, I don't know if this is a fair question, but do you think that this is supposed to be an easier game than Super Mario World? I mean, is this them trying to just play around with different mechanics and have a different experience?
No, I think your second observation is probably right there. I think that they were just trying to figure out what, like, people liked this character and they liked this character. Like, okay, well, what does he do? What's his own game look like? And I don't think it's easier than Super Mario World. I think both games are deceptively difficult at times, because Super Mario World gets real hard and you don't really ever notice the difficulty ramping up, especially after you play it over and over again. But it gets quite difficult, and Yoshi's Island does too. I mean, it's different from a Mario game because you don't have this progression of powering yourself up and losing those powers until you eventually die. But rather, you have like Baby Mario that you worry about. So when you take damage from an enemy, you're not having any sort of damage or repercussions done to Yoshi. He gets stunned for a second, but then Baby Mario goes into a bubble and starts this really annoying siren cry and floating around the screen, and you have a timer. And if you don't make contact with him and put him back on your back within that timer, enemies will come and carry him away, and you lose.
I don't know. Is it supposed to be any kind of way of reference to like the bubble thing that they worked with just a little bit in the Dark Forest of the Super Mario World? Because I've noticed that like he floats off in a bubble, you got to hit the bubble and he comes back to you.
Maybe.
But he doesn't seem to operate the same way, where it's like jumping into him takes you out of your jump motion. I mean, I don't know.
Right,
it could just be that they were just like, we got to make it so that, you know, Baby Mario doesn't just like leave the screen. He's still there, but he also has to be attainable in some way.
Yeah, and I guess a bubble makes the most mechanical sense, because then you like have to, like if it's like some other creature like grabs him and is flying around with him, then you have to service a whole narrative element, like who that thing is and why it's... I don't know. Like I think like just the simple solution, I'm like, nah, it just goes into a bubble and you got to catch him.
Maybe cannot be in any real danger.
Right.
This is a game for children.
So when you go from level to level, your Yoshi changes every time. Like, you get a different color Yoshi, which is kind of cool.
Is there any difference in the Yoshis?
No, they're all just Yoshi. There's different... It's just a visual flair.
So these are all different Yoshis? Yep. There's like 10, 12 different Yoshis you can get?
Just different colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they change from level to level, and...
Which, Ryan, color doesn't matter.
No?
It doesn't.
Really?
We're all the same on the inside.
Oh, I can't see color. I'm actually colorblind.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Everybody looks clear. He just sees your bones.
Yes. It's a shame you'll never be a pilot.
Oh, my God.
We talked a little bit about...
I'm in school right now. Don't tell me that.
We talked a little bit about Baby Mario and his cry. You don't have the health meter. You have the timer counter. This game does have collectibles, also like Donkey Kong Country. They go throughout the levels. You can get red coins, which are disguised just as regular coins. There's like a little bit of extra shading on them, so you can kind of tell the difference, but just
grab... Oh, are those combo coins? Like, you have to get them in sequence or in order to pay off something?
No, they're just like coins hidden throughout the level. There's 20 of them, and you find them in various ways. Sometimes they're just in with another collection of coins. Sometimes you have to ground pound an area or defeat an enemy in a certain way to get them. And then you have like 5 collectible flowers, and those are like your con letters. They're just scattered throughout the level, and sometimes they're hidden, sometimes they're pretty obvious. And then, in order to get like the highest score possible, which is 100 in each level, you have to finish the level with 30 stars, 30 health, 30 on your count meter, which is the maximum that you can get. So you basically have to be perfect throughout the level. And in future Yoshi games, they'll do this thing where if you go through a level and you just collect the 20 red coins, then those are just banked. So if you go through the level and just collect the 5 red stars, it counts it as completed the level, having gotten the stars and the flowers. Hmm. Whereas in the Super Nintendo version, they're a little bit more hardcore. They're like, you in order to get the highest score and complete the level with 100%, you have to run through it. And in that one run through, get all the red coins, all the flowers, all the stars.
Oh, that's rough. Is there a timer? Is there any timer? Or can you play around
with it? No, you can play around with it. Yeah, okay. you can take time, explore, figure out where things are, figure out your relationship with the rest of the level. But it's actually an element of the game, like these collectibles and having these high score runs, that Miyamoto was going to cut from the game. He thought it was just a little bit too demanding. But there's an interview with Miyamoto where he's talking about, like, when they were testing the game, he saw that people were having a lot of fun trying to go through levels and beat each other's scores. And he's like, all right, leave it in. So yeah, this is just like a really fun, silly, whimsical game. I highly recommend it. Oh, and Yoshi, speaking of extra mechanics, he does have a few other transformations and like scripted segments that he goes through. He can like become a helicopter or a digger or a car in certain sections, and it just has you like run through a certain area using his powers. And when Mario also has a transformation where he becomes Super Baby Mario, where he gets off of Yoshi, Yoshi turns into an egg and follows him, and he can run he runs real fast.
That's awesome.
He can run along walls. And he's got like his little yellow cape fluttering behind him as he's running around in his diaper. It's funny. And then actually, during the development of the game, I was reading an interview where to become Super Baby Mario, there are these scripted segments where you grab a star and then have to run quickly through this obstacle course, grab another star, keep going until you get to the end. And during those scripted segments, when you grab that star, instead of becoming Super Baby Mario, they're originally planning on you becoming Adult Mario, with the mustache and the overalls and everything.
Yeah, that's how I would think they would do.
But I guess when they were doing it, it was a little too weird that the baby turned into an adult and then back into a baby. So like, nah, never mind. Just make him a super baby.
An oversized toddler.
Right. So that was the thing from this game that was considered too weird. That was the line.
Oh, and by the way, yeah, did they even attempt to explain that? Like, how the fuck? Like, so he is just this plumber that gets sucked into this world. Like, if you're in the original Mario games, right, he's in this world where he's trying to rescue this princess. Yeah. It's, like, good for him. But apparently he had been there before.
No, I don't think there has ever been an attempt made to explain the relationship of Baby Mario and Adult Mario and where, like, at what point in their timelines they crossed. Now, there is a DS game, Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga Partners in Time, where Baby Mario and Luigi and Adult Mario and Luigi are in a game together, and there's like some sort of narrative time travel element to explain why they're there together. But other than that, like there is no canonical explanation for where Mario is.
So they actually are the baby versions of these people. They're not like their offspring. It's like Peach and Mario banged, and there's Baby Mario.
Yes, there is no official explanation about the relationship. It's just this is Baby Mario. Mm-hmm. Now there are fan theories out there that you can go and find that suggest that maybe this is not a baby version of Mario, but rather
why we're probably find some kind of dirty sex story.
It could be.
Yeah, there's probably some slash fiction.
There's probably some slash fiction with Baby Mario.
You'll notice that this is an oversized hat for this child.
Right.
So it's almost as though he's wearing his father's hat,
mm-hmm.
which has a big M on it. So,
there is that.
You know, just saying.
I mean, it might not even be like Mario's child. Maybe it's Mario's nephew. Maybe that's Luigi's child. We don't know.
It's a fair point.
Maybe it is just Mario. Maybe it's just a younger version of Mario.
I have questions and I want to know.
I'll get Tezuka on the phone.
Thank you. I actually have one more question.
Yeah.
If you're up for it.
Yeah, let's do it.
What is the... So this is your load screen? This is where you come in on the game?
Yeah, that's the intro screen, the island that moves.
This looks like the very first island from the Super Mario World.
Yeah.
Where it's got the mountains and then there's stuff to the right and mm-hmm. stuff to the left. I mean, do they explain that at all? Like, or is this supposed to be like the...
I think it is supposed to be like that. That's Yoshi's Island. It's the same from Super Mario World. That's where Yoshi lives.
Huh.
And he's got different versions of the island. And they kind of all adopt just really similar structures with the hills and the sort of grassy, foresty type feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like the other Yoshi's Island games adopt like similar level structures and designs. There's a couple of Yoshi's Island cameos in different games. Like Super Mario RPG, you go to Yoshi's Island and again, it looks pretty similar. That's just kind of... That's his world. It's like DK Island. It appears in a few different games, and it generally looks about the same.
Yeah. So I guess all the action is on this island. You don't really leave it or anything?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, not that I'm aware. I got to World 3. I'm going to try to finish it, but as far as I know, it's just staying on this one island.
From your take, how difficult is it?
It's not Donkey Kong Country 2 levels of difficult.
Yeah.
It's a little bit friendlier because it saves after every level, and we'll talk about that when we talk about Donkey Kong Country 2 next month. Mm-hmm. But the level of difficulty is decent. It's not super easy. And it's a little bit more forgiving because rather than a health meter, you have that timer, and that timer will refill to 10. Like if Baby Mario's getting away and the timer gets down to 1, you rescue him, mm-hmm. and you just kind of stay still for a little while. You can wait for the timer to refill back up to 10. But that's as high as it gets on its own. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you got to collect little stars at the level to get it higher. It's pretty forgiving in that way, but there's a good amount of challenge to it. And the boss fights... You know, I think one of the biggest criticisms for the developer, Nintendo EAD, who does, like, the Mario games, and they do, like, the Zelda games, they're, like, Nintendo's biggest development house. One of the biggest criticisms of them is they don't really know how to do really good boss fights. Which, like, looking at the Mario series, bosses are very similar throughout this area. It's mostly just find the weak point, jump on it 3 times. Or the other standard formula is this boss is shooting something at you, reflect it back at them 3 times. Mm-hmm. Yoshi's Island, it does get a little bit more experimental than that. You do have to use your eggs to hit bosses. Sometimes you gotta like use like ricochets. But Wes, you were over when I was fighting this one boss. And this one boss was just a ghost coming out of a vase. And the only objective was to push the ghost from the middle of a platform to the edge and push it over the edge, yep. which sends him flying down a pit.
As a couple of little shy guys pushing against you, but eventually, like, you'll knock one off, then they push it back slower, you'll knock another one off, and then he'll just stay there.
Yeah, and really, so. You're just trying to survive. And the ghost will shoot fireballs at you, so you have to, like, strategically push it back far enough and then get away so you don't get hit and lose Baby Mario. Because if you lose Baby Mario, then you're going to be scrambling to get him back and start pushing more toward the center again.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun little structure for a boss fight that is surprisingly different from a lot of the other stuff in the game. But anyway, this game has never been made available on any virtual console service. The cartridge is the only way to get it.
That's messed up.
Which, by the way, what does one pay for a cartridge?
$40.
It's not the end of the world.
I recently saw it on Amazon after I bought it, of course, goddammit, for like 30, a little bit more than 30, 32, something like that.
I mean, that's fine.
There is a GBA remake, which by most accounts is not a great remake. I'm not exactly sure what the problem with it is, but that cart can be obtained for about $10 or $15. If you're going to go the GBA remake route, you can get the GBA remake on the Wii U Virtual Console for $8. But it is not the original version. It is the remake
version.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
I don't know. I couldn't bring myself to get up off my ass and look for the answer to that. So, but yeah, it's just very strange. I'm not exactly sure why. It might have to do with some like the Mode 7 graphical flares, but it's not like there aren't other Mode 7 games available on a virtual console. So it's very strange that the original version has never been made available. I don't know. But yeah, another good one. So two good games in one show. How about that? Next up, I want to take a look into the future, see what we got coming up for the rest of the year.
Oh, Ryan, John and I did a immediate response to the Nintendo Switch. You have any thoughts on that?
From the video you guys showed me is really all I've seen of it. And it makes...
That's really all there is of it.
Yeah, that's it.
To me, it's a logical transition, right? They realize that they've got this console that's not as successful as they'd like it to be, and they've got this thing that's a cash cow in the handheld, and like... Why not find a way to merge them together? I just hope that whatever's going on with my 3DS can find a way onto this new platform. I'd be pumped about it. That's my hot take.
Well, I you know, I don't think...
What's your take? What do you guys think?
Listen
to the show.
Coming from the guy who never listens to the show.
Fucking insult. You never listen to the show.
I think it might be a foregone conclusion that... Oh, sorry. It might not be a foregone conclusion that there won't be another Nintendo dedicated handheld, because there are rumors now that this is announced. Because it's not as if, and me and Wes talked about this, and I don't think we came across as super negative. We were kind of like a balanced opinion. I do like it. It's really slick looking. I like this thing.
If it's as long as it's originally priced, I'll grab it.
But The unit itself, with the hardware, isn't exactly very portable friendly.
Yeah,
it's not something that strikes me as durable as a 3DS, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that at some point we might see like maybe a shrunk down version with a clamshell. And I think that you're right. I think that there is an advantage to merging the two divisions so that you have this more robust library. So you don't have things like Mario Kart 7 on the 3DS and Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U, which are pretty similar games, but they had to make two of them to service these two different devices. Rather than that, you just have Mario Kart Switch.
Yeah.
And it'll work on this home unit that has that.
Well, if you're gonna go screen. If you're gonna make a dedicated home console, I feel like at this point, if you're Nintendo, you really have to try to compete. You have to try to be there with the, whatever PlayStation and Xbox have going on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and I understand that it's never been their idea. They want to make fun party games.
Right.
But considering how good the competition looks, if you can't even be in that, I don't know, in that scope, in that ballpark, don't bother. So make something that I can at least take with me, because I can't take a PlayStation 4 game with me when I'm on the road.
And I think that is going to be the big advantage. If you're going on a extended trip somewhere, like you're going to take a flight, you're going to go up to Boston for a few days because of a hurricane or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
You just pack the Switch, you pack the charger, and there you go. You got your home console with you. You don't have to take all of these extra units, have to hook up to a TV. You don't have to worry about hooking it up to a TV and bringing all these cables and cords with you. It's just like, this is the unit, the controller's with me. There we go. I got my console with me, and it was easy.
Yeah. And I think they have so many games that translate really well, where it's like a fun game to play on a full screen, on a big screen, but then it's some that can like travel with you and you can play.
Yeah, like
in a kind of a smaller condensed version.
Like off TV play was one of the biggest reasons to own a Wii U. It was great to be able to, like, if Des wanted to watch a show on the TV, she would watch it. I'm like, okay, well, I feel like playing a game, but maybe not on my 3DS. So I would grab the Wii U and just play through a console game that way.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see, because I would like to see another handheld, like maybe 3DS size with a clamshell, that maybe does run the same software, so they are merging their two divisions, but also something that would allow other developers to make something smaller scale and not feel like they have to compete with things on a console level scale.
Yeah.
So you have series like Advance Wars or like
Ace Attorney.
Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Professor Layton. Games that I think they could do perfectly fine in HD, but do they want to dedicate the resources to make an HD version of Phoenix Wright?
It's unnecessary to make a console version of that game.
Capcom doesn't even want to make physical versions of that game anymore. They just release them digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this is the Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo was a great console, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Next, it continues to be fantastic, by the
indeed,
way. Yeah,
indeed.
It's not like it went anywhere. When you talk about someone that's dead, it's like, you know, talk about in the past tense all the time.
Right.
Fair enough. Like, this is a great console.
I misspoke earlier when I talked about Donkey Kong Country 2 next month. We have a little bit more time to continue to fail at that game.
Oh, good.
It came out in December of 95.
Oh, and considering we get... Oh, nice. This is actually really good. Spider-Man Venom, Separation Anxiety.
Yeah, that was the first game I ever bought.
That's a great game.
And yeah. Super Turrican 2, I have no idea what that is.
Super Turrican, well, we'll talk about that one. That's an interesting piece of history. One thing I do want to
that's
also...
That's exactly mention, what you hear about, what yeah. you want when you hear about a game. It's an interesting piece of narrative.
I'm sure the developers are listening.
God, I cannot talk.
I'm sure the developers are listening.
It's Irish wristwatch. Irish
wristwatch.
There is one other thing I need to address before we close it out here. When we talked about Chrono Trigger, I was talking about Final Fantasy VI as if it came out after Chrono Trigger. That is not the case. Final Fantasy VI came out in like November of 94, and we talked about that.
Oh, you got my hate mail.
We talked about that game for like a half hour. I couldn't remember doing it at all. Anyway, so yeah, we're not going to be talking about Final Fantasy VI this month, because we already did.
Huh, yeah, okay, fair enough.
All right. I'll see it anywhere on this list anyway, so...
Right, because this list is correct.
Oh.
Anyway, I think that's the end of the show.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Next up is the official show, and we'll have some news and new games to talk about. So, till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.
This is getting cut, you asshole.
God, don't make the S silent.
Hmm, news to me.
Yoshi's Island, or is it Yohi's Island?
It's Yohi's Island.
Yohi?
Yeah, it's one word, by
you
the
said
way.
The S was silent.
You pronounce the apostrophe.